Okay. So welcome, everybody. I hope everyone had a wonderful Pesach, Yom HaTzmaut. And now it's already past the halfway part of Sfira, so it's definitely time to get ready for Shavuos, and there's so many ways we could do so. But what better way than to take a few weeks to begin to explore Megillas Rus? There's like so much that could be done in depth in the Megillah. You know, one of the Sfarim I've been looking at has been the book that Yael Ziegler put out, which is how even a blurred you could tell. I mean, how thick is this thing? 487 pages in her book. And there are many, many other books too. Amazing Sfarim. Rishonim have lots to say. Just the other week, actually, I came across the art scroll Megillas Gedolos, which is really beautiful. The Rishonim there, there's like so much, all packed into this tiny book. I think Megillas Rus actually has, I think, like 75 psukim. You know, it's less than half of the Megillah. It's only 4 prakim long. There's so much to do. And I think the way we're going to attack this, the Sefer, the next 4 weeks, we have 4 shiurim until Shavuos, is we're going to spend 1 week this week on the introduction, the background to the book, and I think the core message for us to try to get across. And we'll illustrate that message by looking not at the main personalities in the Megillah. We'll hold off on Rus and Boaz and Naomi for the next 3 weeks of Mirtz Hashem. This week, after we do the background, we'll look at some of the side characters. As we'll see, I think they play an extremely, extremely important role in communicating what is a really radical message that the Megillah wants to communicate. And then, similar to when we had our Esther series, and we did like a personality profile of Ahasuerus and of Vashti and Esther and Haman and Mordechai, we'll try to do a personality profile. I think next week we'll probably do either Rus or Boaz. I'm not really sure which one we'll do first. And then we'll save Naomi for last, because Naomi really is the only complex personality in the Megillah. One of the really unique things of Megillas Rus is that while in those Sifrei Tanakh, there's a lot of depth and complication with the different personalities. Even we saw when it came to Esther, unquestionably the heroine of Megillas Esther, we saw there was a lot of growth and complication behind the scenes over the course of her trajectory in the Megillah. For sure, people like Ahasuerus was all over the map. In Megillas Rus, there's really nothing bad at all. No one has anything bad that they can say about Rus. There's nothing bad that anybody could say about Boaz. The two main people there are just pure good. The only person who's really complicated, once we actually begin to scratch below the surface, is Naomi. So I think since she's the most complex person in the Megillah, it'll make sense to hold off on looking at her until we have a strong foundation with the other people. Okay, so let's begin. There's a comment in the Medrash, which is very striking. Actually, the Dat Mikra has this as like the opening quote in their introduction to the Megillah, where the Medrash asks, I think it's Rabbi Zeira, who asks, why was Megillas Rus written? Which is a surprising question to ask. But other Sifrei Tanakh, it's very clear. We know exactly why there's so much to learn in Sefer Yoshua and Shoftim and Shmuel, Esther. There's no question. We definitely need Megillas Esther. Rus, so the Medrash asks, why is Rus written? Medrash says there's no halacha in Rus, which is an interesting thing to say. But Megillah says the whole point of Rus is to show the reward that Hashem gives to Gomle Chasad. The power of Chesed, the Medrash highlights, is the central piece of the Megillah. And there are other messages which come through in the Megillah, which we'll often see focused on, the role of Eretz Yisrael, the decision of Elimelech to leave, and the consequences of that, the role of the Ger, Rus, who along with maybe Yisro serves for all time as the, really, yeah, Rus herself, is the all-time inspiration as the Giores. What are family responsibilities? The build-up to monarchy, of course, the end of the Megillah gives us the lineage of Rus building up to David HaMelech. And here the Medrash says, the whole purpose of the Sefer is Chesed. Or I think we're going to try to show what exactly the Megillah means by that. And to scratch below the surface of just the generic message we might hear, which would be chesed is important. Yes, we know. We're well aware that chesed is important. If that's all I needed to know, I'm not sure we would have needed a whole sefer just to tell us that chesed is important. I mean, Ravino already is engaged in chesed. It's one of his trademark attributes. So what do we mean by that? There is a unique lesson to be learned about chesed from Megillah Rus, and I'm going to try to show that the Megillah actually has a really radical claim about chesed. And that claim is going to help us understand a few things that Chazal have to say. So let's open up the screen share, and we'll begin to look at a few Ma'amari Chazal, and then the background of the Megillah, and then the personalities, and that will be our share for tonight. So here we go. Begin with the Gemara in Sota, Daf Yodal Amar Al. This was covered by the Daf Yomi about 3 weeks ago. Just a good Mara Malkum to have in your back pocket. You ever want Dvar Torah about Chesed, which everybody always loves Dvar Torah about Chesed, so you can't do worse, you can't do better really than Rabbi Simloi right over here in the Gemara. By the way, Rabbi Simloi is the same Rabbi Simloi who says that he points out there are 613 mitzvos. So that's one claim to fame. Rabbi Simloi counts up the Taryag mitzvos. So over here, Rabbi Simloi says something else. He says, Torah tchilasa gemilas chasadim besofa gemilas chasadim. The chumash begins and ends with chasad. How so? Tchilasa gemilas chasadim dechsev vayas Hashem Elokim la'adam u'lishtau kasnos or vayal bishem. Hashem dresses, Hashem clothes Adam and Chava. Right, they've sinned already and they're being thrown out of Gan Eden. Hashem should just wash his hands of them, but instead, Hashem gives them clothing, right? That's how we begin in Parshas Bereishis. V'sofa gemilas chasadim d'chsiv v'yekbor oso bagai. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself buries Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chumash ends with Hashem engaged in chesed shel emes, taking care of the dead. So we just needed this Gemara pointing out that the Torah begins and ends with chesed to get a sense of how central chesed is to Yiddishkeit. And it's something that it's so imbued in us. It's something which we're taught from such a young age. Avraham Avinu with Hachnasas Orachim, Moshe Rabbeinu helping the daughters of Tzipporah at the well. On and on. It's important sometimes to take a step back and think about what the magnitude of that. Beyond just the Chumash, the Gemara telling us that the Torah decides to begin and end with Chesed, as the Gemara here points out. So I want to highlight the beginning of our Shir, the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Ayin Tes, which I think there's a deeply ironic piece to the Gemara over here. You know, we said Megillah is going to end right with David HaMelech, the birth of David HaMelech from the unlikeliest of ancestors, from Rus the Moaviyah. And one of the questions, there's no question, Megillah, is what is the role of the Ger, particularly what is the role of the Ger from a problematic background. The Chumash does tell us that we are not allowed to accept a convert from Ammon or Moab because of the cruelty that they displayed towards us when we were coming out of Mitzrayim. This then raises the question, who is somebody who should be allowed to join the Jewish people, right? What the Gemara is going to do here is it's going to take some of those other themes of the Megillah, at least for our purposes. The Gemara is going to take some of those other themes of the Megillah, the role of the Ger, the role of the king, the role of David HaMelech, and let's see, it's going to all shift those pieces back to the central question, which is, what exactly is the role of chesed? What does chesed mean? The Gemara here is talking about a very challenging episode at the end of Sefer Shmuel Beis, I think it is in Perek Chaf Aleph, where a famine strikes Bnei Yisrael. They're told that the famine is happening because there were people from the nation of Givon who were killed in the time of Shaul. Givon is the group of Canaanim who live south of Yerushalayim, who after hearing about the destruction of Yericho and the Ai, under the leadership of Yehoshua, as Bnei Yisrael are invading Eretz Yisrael, so they panic because they realize that they have absolutely no chance militarily against Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fighting with open miracles on their behalf. So Gibeon has choices. They can run away, which they don't want to do. They can observe the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach, which they don't want to do. Or they can try to deceive Yehoshua into signing a peace treaty. So that's what happens. They pretend to be, they send a delegation which pretends to be from a faraway land. Yehoshua signs a peace treaty with them. After Yehoshua finds out what happens, he's furious, but the treaty is a treaty, and so he's going to accept it. So the Givonim hanging around, even though Bnei Yisrael have to wipe out all of the members of Canaan, the people from Givon hang around. And now I find out at the end of Shmuel Beis that apparently some of them had been killed during the reign of Shaul HaMelech. It's unclear when exactly this happened. For our purposes, we just need to know that there were Givonim who were killed, and now the punishment is coming up. Why does the punishment come up in the generation of David, not in the generation of Shaul? So Chazal talk about that, but not for now. Gemara says, so the Givonim is the pasuk. Hashem, the David says to the Givonim, what can I do for you? How can I atone for the sin that was done? And they tell him, Ein lanu kasef ezav im shalem besa. We don't want silver, we don't want gold. Yutan lanu shiva anashim ibanav v'okanum lashem. They want seven members of Shaul's household whom they can execute. Shaul is responsible for the death of our people. Mida, keneged mida, we want to kill people from Shaul's family instead. They insist on midas hadin, eye for an eye. Shaul killed ours. We want to kill his. There is no other atonement which we are going to accept. That is how the Navi sets things up. Okay, David is offering them, what can I give you instead? What will you take to have mercy on the family of Shaul? The members of Gibeon say, we are insisting on pure, unmitigated justice. The Gemara is bringing this up on Daf Ayin Tes because the Gemara is telling us that David HaMelech is the one who decreed that Bnei Yisrael from now on would not be allowed to intermarry with the members of Gibeon. Somebody could be a convert. He's from Gibeon. David says the members of Gibeon cannot marry into Bnei Yisrael. Why does he do so? So Gemara, this is now the Gemara talking, where it says, Paisinu velo mepaisu. Right? David tried as hard as he could. It's clear from the pasuk. They wouldn't accept any alternative. Finally, Amar, Shlosha simanim yesh pe'umazo. There are three signs, three distinguishing marks for anybody who is a member of Klal Yisrael. Rachmanim, Abayshanim, Begomle Chasadim. All Jews have mercy, they have shame, and they do chesed. That's the most important one for us. Rachmanim dechsev, v'nasam lecha, rachamim, v'riachamcha, v'herbecha. Torah says, literally, Hashem gave you mercy. Now, what does it mean he gave you mercy? You might think that Hashem was merciful to you, but then the Chumash continues, v'richamcha, and he was merciful towards you. So the Gemara understands Hashem literally gave us. We are divinely gifted with the attribute of rachamim. We can have mercy on those who we could have otherwise been cruel towards. By shanin, we have shame. Tichsev b'avor tiyeh yiraso al p'neichem. So Hashem's awe is going to be upon us at Matan Torah. Finally, and most importantly for us, Gomle Chasadim, the hallmark of Yiddishkeit, of someone who's a member of Klal Yisrael, is acts of Chesed. Tichsev, l'man asher yitzaveh es banav es b'nei beiso. So when Hashem is going to wipe out Sodom, so he tells the Malachim, or he tells himself, I need to inform Avraham of what I'm going to do, because I know that Avraham is going to command his household to follow Tzedek u'mishpa. So Tzedek here at Tzedakah equals Chesed. So immediately David HaMelech declares, Kol sheyesh bo shlosha simanim halalu, ra'oi lehidavek b'umazo. Anybody else, if somebody wants to sign up on a Geirus program, they want to join Klal Yisrael, we need to check the marks. Do they have the checkbox for Rachmanim? Do they have the checkbox for Baishanim? Do they have mercy? Do they have shame? And can they check the box for Gomle Chasadim? The background to this Gemara is the controversial lineage of David HaMelech himself. Because David is the one who, when he is rising through the ranks, people are calling him out and saying, hey, David comes from a lineage where he should not be able to join Bnei Yisrael. Why? because he comes from Rus HaMoaviyah. The Chumash said black on white in Devarim that a member of Moab cannot enter into Bnei Yisrael. Now, Gemara explains there's a halachic piece over here. There's a reason behind the halachic nuance, which is only males of Moab, but not females of Moab. The reason for that, though, is that the Torah says that when we came out of Mitzrayim, the men of Moab did not come forward giving us food and drink. The women were not expected to come forward giving us food and drink. Therefore, the women were exempted. But what's going on behind this Gemara is Rus is the paradigm of Chesed. So David, the descendant of Gerim, is telling us, you want to know who's allowed, who's ra'ui lehidavdek ba'umazo, who can cleave to Am Yisrael? The Megillah, by the Megillah's Rus, uses the phrase that Rus was davak. She cleaved to Naomi. You want to know who's eligible to cleave and who's not eligible to cleave? Look at, are they gomle chasadim? And Rus is not only going to be a gomelas chasad, her book is going to be the ultimate book of gomelas chasadim. David is the one particularly who is saying that is what allows you to be in. And the conduct of the givunim over here is what is going to send us out. So we see then, under the surface of the Gemara over here, the question, the role of the ger, who comes into Bnei Yisrael and who doesn't come into Bnei Yisrael. David HaMelech is telling us here in the Gemara, that question cannot be discussed in isolation in a bubble from the question of Chesed. It's not a coincidence that the Sefer of Chesed is also the Sefer which highlights bringing in the ger. At the same time, it's not going to be a coincidence that the book of David, the book of who's the king, is also going to be the book for the book of Chesed, because David HaMelech, who's the Melech, is going to be the offspring of Rus, and he's going to be the one who is sensitive to the role of Chesed. The last Gemara I wanted to flag. Beginning of our learning of the Sefer is the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. In many ways, I think this is going to be the most important source that we are going to see in the course of our entire series. This question is how much Chesed is required and how radical is Megillas Rus going to be in its expectations, in its demand. The Gemara here tells us the following. Tani Rabbi Yosef. This is Parshas Yisro. So this is a great appropriate as we prepare for Matan Torah, because this is a pasuk here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe as Bnei Yisrael are getting to Har Sinai. Vodata lachem beis chayeyem esaderech. So that's what the pasuk is. Vodata lachem esaderech asher yelchuba. So you're going to let them know the way which they are supposed to go. The Gemara darshens this piece by piece. Beis chayei, gemilas chasadim, asher yelchu ba'bikur cholim, burial, judgment. Okay, fine. Different pieces are selected by the Gemara darshening every part of that pasuk. The most important one, the end of the pasuk, when Hashem tells Moshe, asher yelchu ba, or asher yasun, that they shall do, this means they need to go lifnim mishuras hadin. Lifnim mishuras hadin. Always translated as what? Going beyond the letter of the law. The line of the law, literally. And what does it mean to go beyond the letter of the law? There's a bit of a... Oh, let's continue on the Gemara. By definition, right? If it's beyond the letter of the law, it seems like something that we cannot demand people to do. So it's a little bit odd for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to command Moshe Rabbeinu that Bnei Yisrael have to know that they must go beyond the letter of the law. That sounds like an internal contradiction, doesn't it? So the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, "Asher yasun zolif nimishuras adin." The Amar of Yochanan, and this has to be seen to be believed. Lo harva Yerushalayim ela al shadanu ba din Torah. So the reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed, says Rabbi Yochanan, was because they adjudicated according to Torah. They went by the halacha, and that's how Yerushalayim was destroyed. Now this is not what they taught us in sleepwaking. No, sinas chinam. The big three elsewhere in the Gemara. What do you mean? Yerushalayim was destroyed? I'll read it again. Lo charva Yerushalayim ela al shadanu ba din Torah. Yerushalayim was destroyed because they filed the Torah. That's not a typo. The Gemara asks, ela dina de megizta ledaino? What? Should they have used like arbitrary halacha? Should they have made up law? What does it mean? Of course they used din Torah. What's wrong with that? That's exactly what we would expect. Ella Ema, rather you have to explain, Sheheimidu dinehem al din Torah, all of their cases, they followed the letter of the law, the din Torah, the lo avdu lifnim mishuras hadin. And they did not go beyond the letter of the law. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that apparently going lifnim mishuras hadin, going beyond the letter of the law, is not just something that we approve of. It's not something that we recommend. It's not something which is going to get people happy with our behavior. Going beyond the letter of the law is something which is a total and absolute obligation. And one, if we fail to do that, the consequences are going to be radical. The destruction of Yerushalayim, the Churban, is happening because of it. And we'll see, I think that is exactly what the claim of Megillas Rus is going to be. Rus is going to be the Sefer of Chesed, but it's not just sweet and nice and happy. Which you read Megillah, read in Shul, and we're barely awake, and it's 20 minutes, and right? It's a very smooth, happy Sefer. There's no question about that. It's very neatly packaged. You know, Yael Zigo, for example, does an amazing job of showing some of the symmetry, everything in the book. You know, it opens in a way, it ends in a way. There's a lot of beauty and symmetry and parallelism in the book. But the real core claim Megillah is going to make is that when it comes to Chesed, you are either in the world of radical Chesed, you are either lifnim mishuras hadin, you are either demanding sacrifices of yourself, which are heroic in nature, or you're someone who's going to be completely cast by the wayside. There's no two way. There's no softer way of saying it. If we're going to look very carefully, that's going to be it. We're either all in on Chesed. We're either aspiring to be a Rus, we're aspiring to be a Boaz, we're aspiring to be an Avraham Avinu, we're aspiring to go lifnim mishuras hadin. Once we go easy, once we let off the gas, once we decide, you know, Chesed is nice, but I really would rather not impose on myself. The slope down from there is going to go by so fast. Okay, that I think is the claim Megillah is going to make, as we will begin to see. Now the way to kind of settle this up as we begin the Megillah is to look at what is the world that Rus is coming into. What's the world that Naomi, that Boaz are coming into? Famously, the Megillah begins by saying, "Vayhi bimei shvot hashoftim." It happened in the day, right? The days of the judging of the judges. So the Megillah itself begins by placing itself in the context of Shoftim. So all the modern Mefarshim point out that we need to understand that Rus is going to come as a corrective to the behavior in Sefer Shoftim. Now, this is most radical at the end of the book. As we'll see, it really goes to the book as a whole. Sefer Shoftim is one giant tragedy. We come in having just had the amazing success of Yehoshua. You know, Yehoshua in many ways really could lay claim to be the most successful Jewish leader of all time. You know, not the greatest leader. Moshe Rabbeinu would take that title, and Yehoshua would be the first to give it to him. But you read Sefer Yehoshua, and almost nothing ever goes wrong. The worst we can do is there's one guy who steals a little bit of gold from Yericho, and they solve that problem in one paragraph. Otherwise, they're following the halachos, they're following Yehoshua. You know, Moshe's miraglim are bad, Yehoshua's miraglim are good. They are conquering the land. They're united. Everything is wonderful. We come into Shoftim, and the book just goes from bad to worse. The quality of the Shoftim goes from bad to worse. We begin with an Asniel ben Kanaz. We begin with a Devora, who's a Nevia. And then by the end, the Shoftim we have are the Yiftachs and the Shimshons of the world. The end is the most egregious, the story of the Pilegesh Begiva, the story where there's Levi, who's supposed to be a man of spiritual note, supposed to be a man who's particularly impressive, a role model. Okay, fine. So what happens instead is we have this guy. He's married to a Pilegesh. That's already eye-opening. You wouldn't expect a Levi to have a concubine. The Rambam thinks that you're only allowed to marry a Pilegesh if you're a king. So you have a Levi who has a Pilegesh. The Pilegesh is cheating on him. Then she runs back to her father's house. He runs after her. The Levi and the father-in-law feast for days and days. The woman is totally ignored. They end up finally traveling on the way to go home. They stay over in a Jewish city in Giva, which is a city in Shevet Binyamin. The members of Binyamin act in a way which is blatantly referential to Sodom, as we'll see in detail in a minute. They demand the rape of the Levian's wife. The Levi throws his concubine out to the crowd. She is brutally raped. She dies. The next day, the Levi gets all Bnei Yisrael together. For the first time in the book of Shoftim, the Jewish army gets together. Instead of fighting against the Canaanim, they declare civil war. They fight three battles against Binyamin. In the first two battles, many Jews are killed. In the third battle, Shevet Binyamin is almost entirely wiped out. The Jewish army, after the battle is over, continues to commit a genocide, essentially, and wipe out any member of Binyamin wherever they can. And then they're left realizing, oh my gosh, we've almost wiped out a Shevet from Israel. We've sworn there are only like 600 men surviving from Binyamin. So how are they going to get married? It seems like they wiped out all the women of Binyamin, because apparently that's an appropriate thing to do, kill women when you're fighting a battle. So no problem, right? Marry them off to other Jewish men. Well, we can't do that because we took an oath. They took a shvua not to marry off their daughters to any member of Shevet Binyamin. So they say, we have a solution. Some one city, Yavish Gilad, where the Jews did not join the civil war against Binyamin. So they go, they murder all the Jews of Yavish Gilad. They kidnap all the women from there, forcibly marry them to the survivors of Binyamin, and we live happily ever after. Story is a shocking disaster from beginning to end. And the Navi reminds us again and again that it was in those days there was no king in Israel. And there was no leadership. So leadership we'll focus on in another week. What's the role of leadership in Megillah's rest? But when the Megillah, when Shoftim tells us that by the end, the behavior of Shevet Binyamin is shockingly echoing Sodom, that's part of a claim that the Jews, as they are living in Eretz Yisrael, and they're going from worse to worse, the Jews are transforming from being the people who are supposed to wipe out the Canaanim. They are instead transforming into the Canaanim themselves. The nation that was there before Avraham Avinu, the nation that was there that the Torah, just in this past week's parsha, told us, Kemasei Canaan, don't behave like that nation. Their ethics, their morals are the antithesis, literally, to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu selects from Avraham Avinu. And Yisrael are turning into that nation by the end of Sefer Shoftim. The sins begin with them failing to drive out Canaan. They end with them transforming into Canaan. Sodom is a city in Eretz Canaan. In many ways, Sodom is the epitome of the lifestyle of Canaan. There are three dramatic ways that the Navi there tries to communicate how by the end of Shoftim, the entire legacy of Avram Avinu is being abandoned. And instead, Am Yisrael, instead of living up to the bris of the Avos, they're going off and they're turning into the Canaan. First, again, is all of the Sodom links which come up there in the Sefer. There are many words which are in common. You have the Levi says, let's go sleep in the city, just like the Malachim say, we'll sleep in the city. And there's one nice guy in Giva who says, no, come into my house. Just like Lot is the one nice guy in Sodom who says, come into my house. In the house, the mob comes in both places. They come, they surround the house, and they demand the guests be handed over for them to assault. Lot tells the people from Sodom, leave the guests alone here. Take my daughters. They demand the rape. Both of them have the exact same word. Al achai, al tereyuna. Right, Lot and the one local. Each one. No, don't do this. Don't do this. The local man offers his daughter instead. The Lot offers his daughters instead. Okay, it's all horrible. The Ramban is the Ramban right there actually in Vayera. So he discusses the parallel because it's just, it beats you over the head. The Ramban says, What the Navi wants you to know is that as bad as Bnei Yisrael got, we never got quite as bad as Sodom. So he has a different spin. You know, he shows, if you read carefully, you'll see that Binyamin wasn't quite as bad as Sodom. Okay, so there's no question that that's true. We're like one level, maybe half a level above what they were. But the broader point that the Navi is trying to make is that here we have turned into Sodom. At the same time, the Navi does a second thing. So there are going to be three ways the Navi is going to communicate that we are transforming into Canaan. Sodom references are number one. The second one is the Navi has some deeply ironic contrasts between that Levi who's running around, the Levi who is ignoring his wife, and then he's feasting, and then he's throwing his wife out to the mob, and then he's starting up a civil war, ways in which the Navi contrasts that Ish Levi with Avram. So we have a number, some parallels. Both of them are traveling with their donkeys. You know, the Akedah begins, Vayachavoshes chamaro veyikacha shnei ne'aravito. The Ish Levi, same thing, he's got the donkeys, and he's got the lad. The Akedah begins with Avraham getting up in the morning. Vayashkem Avraham baboker, right? He got up in the morning, remember, and Chazal comment, he was so excited to go do what Hashem commanded that he saddled his own donkey. Chazal there contrast Avraham Avinu with Bilam HaRasha. This idea of Vayashkem Avraham baboker, he's up, crack of dawn, ready to go. In the story of Pelegah Shvegiva, this Ish Levi also, he keeps on getting up in the morning, again and again. Except it's ironic because he gets up in the morning and then he never leaves. First he waits 4 months to go chase his wife. His wife runs away and he waits 4 months to get her. And then Vayashkima Bavoker, Vayakum Alechas, he gets up to go, and then he sits down and he needs some more food and wastes the rest of the day. 1 day, 2 days, 3, 4, 5 days. The Ish Levi wastes because he can't actually get up and get out because he needs to have another day-long feast with his father-in-law. So you have Avram who's getting up in the morning and going right away. The Ish Levi gets up and then he just goes back to the dining room table. Both of them are traveling to the same place. One of the real tragic moments in Shoftim, I mean, there's so many with Plegash Begiva, but they're traveling. And they're almost on the way to the city of Yavus. So the lad who's traveling with the Levi and his Pelegesh says, hey, here's Yavus. Why don't we go to Yavus? The Levi says, Pasnish. It's not Shaykh. We're not going to Yavus. Yavus is a Canaanite city. We can't stay with the Canaanim. We can't stay with the Goyim. We got to stay with the Jews. So we're going to go to Giva. And of course, the irony there is that the Jewish city of Giva acts exactly like a Canaanite city. But there are a couple of pieces over here. Literally, Achad HaMekamos, right? We're going to go to one of the places, is exactly the way Avram is traveling to the Akedah. He's going to go to Achad HaRim, one of the mountains. But they end up, this is the same spot. Because what is Yavus? Yavus is Yerushalayim. Now, it's only Yerushalayim because there's another thing Shoftim is reminding us. Bnei Yisrael have not conquered Yerushalayim. It still is in Canaanite hands. Avram is going to Eretz HaMoriah. Hara Moriah, Hara Bayis, Yerushalayim. They're going to the same place. The Navi is like putting them together. But everything is the opposite, right? We have Avraham, the radical opposite of the Ish Levi. One of the, let's skip the rest of these, but just two, you have to see that one is fun. The Chumash describes maybe the most like emotional moment with Avram and Yitzchak. Vayelchu shnehem yachdav, right? They walked together, and the Chumash says it twice. It's like the most important thing in the whole story is that they're together. You know, Rashi says at first they're together when Yitzchak does not know what's going on, and then Yitzchak is together when he does know. He does know what's going on. So it's vayelchu yach shnehem yachdav. They walked together to fulfill the ununderstandable commandment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it comes to the Ish Levi, it's him feasting with his father-in-law, and it's Vayochlu Shnehem Yachtav. They ate together. Vayochlu Shnehem Yachtav or Vayochlu Shnehem Yachtav. If you don't listen carefully, it sounds very similar. But the image we get is the exact opposite. We have a father and a son walking to Har Moriah to do the ultimate exhibition of Yerushalayim, to sacrifice his son, having no idea how that's at all something that he could be commanded to do. But Hashem said, do it, I'm going to do it. That's one set of father and son. And over here, we have the other father and son who are just sitting and eating and eating and eating for day after day after day. And then one, the clincher is at the end of the episode for the Ish Levi, when he wants to stir up civil war after he discovers his wife's dead body. So he takes a knife, he cuts her body up into pieces, and he sends it all around to everybody in Klal Yisrael to bring them together, and which is going to begin the civil war. Except the Torah doesn't say he takes out a sakin, he doesn't take out a cherev, he takes out a ma'achalas. The word used for knife there is ma'achalas. The only other time we have anywhere in Tanakh which refers to a knife as a ma'achalas is the knife which Avraham Avinu took to shecht his son. So the overall image we have is the Navi is putting Avraham Avinu, the Akedah, next to Ish Levi. But they're opposites. Binyamin and Sodom are being put together. They're the same. And, you know, the third thing that the Navi does is there are a number of links between the episode of Pelegah Shagiva and the rape of Dina. There's some similar language you could see here in the box, a similar general phenomenon, of course, of the assault. Now, Dina is assaulted by the prince of, by Shechem, who's again, a Canaanite prince. You want to see the values of Canaan up close and personal? No, look no further than the story of Shechem. What's now happened? Who's acting like Shechem? Who's acting like Hamor in Sefer Shoftim? It's the people of Binyamin, right? The Shvatim are horrified. They said, Nivala Asabi Israel. How could this be done? By Shechem. Here, the same language is used. Es Nivala Hazos. How could this be done? It's not being done by Shechem or by Canaan anymore. It's being done by members of Bnei Yisrael. So the end image we have in Sefer Shoftim is that the Jews are turning into the Canaan. Now, what's going to happen in Megillas Rus is that of all people, Rus HaMoaviyah, right? The Giores is going to be one of the people who is going to turn things around. So that's important from a Geirus perspective. But the broader, what got us to this point, right? Pelegash Megiva didn't come out of a vacuum. What gets us to that point in Sefer Shoftim is the lack of chesed throughout the Sefer. And it just comes to a climactic point with the Pelegash Megiva. Pelegash Megiva, we just have cruelty that's beyond belief. But where does that come from? You know, people don't wake up in the one day and decide I'm going to just be cruel and heartless and evil. No, it's not a comic book. That comes from years and years and years of ethical erosion. The Navi only has two instances of chesed in the entire Sefer Shoftim. Chesed comes up over and over and over again in the four prakim of Rus. In the 21 prakim of Shoftim, comes up twice. One time, the end of Perek Ches, after the death of Gidon, the probably greatest of the Shoftim, where the Navi tells us, Lo asu chesed in Beis Yerubal Gidon. The Jews are not going to do chesed with Gidon. His entire family is going to be wiped out in one chapter. Lo asu chesed. They didn't do chesed. The other time that the word chesed appears is, at first it may seem nice, but when you dig deep, it's a little funny and a little sad. The Navi, the beginning of Shoftim, the first parak, describes some of the conquests that Bnei Yisrael made. We'll look at this a little bit more next week. We talk about the role of leadership. We talk about Boaz. The Navi tells us, Yosef, the Shevet of Yosef gets up. This is seemingly Ephraim. They're besieging the city of Luz. They do not know how to penetrate the city. They find somebody escaping. They capture him. And they tell him, let us know the secret exit. V'asinu imcha chesed. Let us know how to get in, and we'll do chesed to you. That sounds nice. We'll do chesed. What's the chesed that they do? So he shows them the entrance to the city. They wipe out the whole city. And the Navi tells us, Ha'ish v'eskol meshpachto shilechu. The man and his whole family, they send away. So one could read that and say, okay, well, I guess that's chesed. You know, chesed was that the man and his family survived. Now, we might think that until we notice that what the Navi is doing here is the Navi is contrasting the supposed chesed being performed by the people from Yosef with a similar episode that happened one sefer earlier, in sefer Yehoshua. And the other time, we have one member of the city help Bnei Yisrael conquer the city, and Bnei Yisrael save that person and the whole family. It was Racha, when Yericho is destroyed, and Racha had protected the Meraglim, so the two Meraglim, Chazal say, Kalev and Pinchas, tell Racha, you know, we promise we'll protect you and your family. So what happens? There the Navi tells us, so Rachav was taken out. Rachav, Abia, Ima, Achas, Kol HaShalav, Eskol Meshvah, Oseah, Hotziu, Ve'enichu, Michutz, L'machane Yisrael. They took everybody out and all their stuff, and they put them down outside of Machane Yisrael. Now, if you hold on a second, you know, they seems very respectful. They gather Rachav, Rachav's whole family, all of Rachav's possessions, and they put them down, Ve'enichu. It's a very gentle language. They put them down, Lenoach, to rest, right outside the camp of Israel. Now, look back at the supposed chesed that was done by the members of Yosef. They find some guy, and they say, let us into the city, and we'll do chesed. What chesed do? The man and his family, they send away. What chesed is there? What happens to their stuff? They don't keep their stuff. Their stuff is gone. Their stuff has been pillaged. Navi doesn't say that they take their stuff. Rachav were told that they had Eskol Asher La. All her possessions, everything she had, she was able to keep. The chesed, the one chesed, quote unquote, done in Sefer Shoftim, is they tell the guy, we will give you the kindness of letting you escape with your life. And we'll have the nerve to call letting you escape with your life chesed. What happens at the end for each one of those? So the Navi tells us for Yehoshua, Rachav Hazona, her whole family, Ves Besa, Via, Ves Kol Ashela, we have to be told again, all her stuff, her family and everything she had, Hechaya Yehoshua, Vateshev Bekerev Yisrael Ad Hayom Hazeh, and she dwells in the midst of Yisrael until this very day. In Chazal, Rachav becomes another exemplar of the Gioras, there's medrash that she actually marries Yehoshua. But it's a very warm ending for Rachav. Her family has their stuff. Her family's all together. They're put down in Machane Yisrael, Ad Hayom Hazeh. What does this man do? This man leaves. The other guy in Shoftim, he goes to Eretz Achitim, and he builds a city called Luz. That's also Ad Hayom Hazeh. He's very successful, but he's far, far, far away. There is no chesed in Sefer Shoftim. We're told once about a chesed, which is they didn't do chesed. That's for Gidon. And the other one is where they imagine it's chesed, but it's really nothing of the sort. Now, where that really already begins with the beginning of the book. The theme in Sefer Shoftim is nobody's going to do anything unless there's something in it for me. This comes up again and again and again. The idea of the quid pro quo. For example, Devorah goes nuts against this. After her battle against Sisera, when she has her song, and she goes through, she has, here's the list of all the Shvatim. Here are the Shvatim who showed up for the battle, and here are the Shvatim who didn't show up for the battle. Why did some Shvatim show up? Because they were in danger. Why did some Shvatim not show up? They washed their hands of it. They said, if this doesn't affect me, I'm not going to get involved. This recurs again and again in Sefer Shoftim. Bnei Yisrael never come together. Every Shevet is going to deal with its own business. And no one else is going to help them. No one is helping each other. If it does not follow my self-interest, I'm not going to get involved. The last of the Shoftim, Shimshon, really brings this to the fore. Shimshon, every fight he has with the Plishtim, it's always following a personal vendetta. They steal his wife, they take his stuff, and so he goes and he picks a fight with the Plishtim. There's never any leadership being shown. It's all quid pro quo. And this begins, really, with the very, very beginning of the book, literally. Parak Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Vehi acharei Mos Yehoshua. Vayashalu b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem limor, miyalel lenu el kanani batzchila lilachem bo. Yeshua dies, the Jews ask Hashem, they go to the Arum Tumim, it's all wonderful. Who should begin fighting the Canaanim? Vayamar Hashem, Yeshua ya'ala. Right? Hashem says Yehuda should be the first one. Okay, Yehuda is Nachshon ben Aminadav, the leading shaven. Makes a lot of sense. Then Paragimel already, it all falls apart because Yeshua says to Shimon, hey, you're my neighbor, let's go together and I'll help you with my, you help me with my land and I'll help you with your land, right? I'll help you if you help me. What is the ethos being shown here? Quid pro quo. There's no chesed. If there's no benefit for me, then I'm not going to benefit you. And that is we have throughout Sefer Shoftim. And if that is the world you live in, and it's fair, it's din, we'll call this shuras hadin, it's fair for me to say, I'm not going to help you, help me, and I'll help you. The Mishnah Perkei Avos calls that the beinoni, that's the middle approach. But if that's how we begin the Sefer, with the middle approach, no chesed, it's just, I help you, you help me, look how we have the ending. And does this sound familiar? Pilegesh v'giva, the civil war begins. Who should lead the battle against Binyamin? Vayomer Hashem, Yehuda batchila. Hashem gives us the rope to hang ourselves with. Yehuda is going to lead the battle. Beginning of Sefer Shoftim, Bnei Yisrael were supposed to be united to fight the Canaanim. Hashem said that's the plan. One shevet, Yehuda, you lead everybody else in battle. Instead, Yehuda forsakes his responsibility of leadership and instead goes and just pursues his own self-interest. Now, by the time we get to the end of the Sefer, they're asking the same question. They're getting the same answer, right? But the reminder is, where was the unity until now? If there is no chesed, if there's just din, it's going to end with a perversion of din, where the Jews are going to say, we're going to wipe out a shevet in Binyamin because of the moral outrage that we have. And we're left with a total farce where we have thousands and thousands and thousands of dead. One city turning into Sodom, one shevet being wiped out, complete and utter and total collapse. So that is the background, the ethical background in Sefer Shoftim, the abandonment of chesed. It begins innocently enough. It begins with the pursuit of self-interest. It begins with the pursuit of din. But once we have a refusal to set aside what is good for me, to sacrifice my self-interest in order to help someone else, that never happens once in Sefer Shoftim. Nobody ever says, I'll set aside what is good for me in order to help you. From literally the very beginning of the book, it's going to end with a world of Canaan, with a world of Sodom, with a world which has completely repudiated everything that Avraham Avinu stood for and which Klal Yisrael was founded upon. Okay, now with the time left tonight, let's bring this into the Megillah and let's show how the non-central personalities all have this same problem. And again, Chazal are onto it. We'll look at 10 minutes, get it in, Elimelech, and then we'll see a couple more. So the Megillah begins that there's a famine and there's a man who leaves with his wife and his kids. And the name of the man is Elimelech. By Pasuk Gimel, Elimelech is dead. It was a bit of a twist. You know, usually the Sefer begins, there was a man named Elimelech. You'd think he'd last more than 2.5 psukim. You know, so that's a twist. But he's gone. Now, why does Elimelech die? So there are two main streams of thought over here. One reason why Elimelech is killed is because he left Eretz Yisrael. He left Eretz Yisrael. Now, Rashi doesn't say that. And why you would or wouldn't say it is interesting. On the one hand, one reason why you would not want to emphasize the role of Eretz Yisrael is to say, look at Pasuk Aleph and look at Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Aleph, we're told, Vayilich ish v'yislacham Yudah lagur bisdei Moab. Now, if we remember our Haggadah, what does lagur mean? The Haggadah literally had a drasha on that. Lagur ba'aretz banu. We came to dwell in the land. The Haggadah has the drasha. Lagur v'lo lehishtakeya. We had no intent. The Shvatim had no intent of permanently living in Mitzrayim. The Megillah here is saying that Elimelech had no plan on permanently dwelling in Moab. He wanted Lagur b'Shtei Moab. What happens, though, in Pasuk Dalid, after Elimelech dies, his sons call an audible. His sons change things. They intermarry. Vayeshvushan, and they settle in Moab. So one strong way of reading the Psukim is that Elimelech always planned on going back to Eretz Yisrael. His sons, the crime that they have is they decide to stay in the land of Moab. They decide to assimilate, they intermarry, they want to assimilate into Moabi society. Right? That's one, that's okay. Now the counter to that happens to be Megillah said they came to Moab, Vayihusha, and they were there. So the other way you want to say, if you want to look at this from an Eretz Yisrael lens, is you can say originally Elimelech's intent was to be there for a little bit. Once you get there, you know, the Yetzer Hara works, you get comfortable, he sticks around, and then Elimelech gets killed. That's how you would defend the Eretz Yisrael focus on Elimelech's sin. But that, again, is not what Rashi does here at all. Rashi says, why was Elimelech killed? Ashir Gadol Haya, he was tremendously wealthy. He was miserly. He was miserly towards the poor who were coming to ask him for food. And so therefore he was punished. Now this is a bit of a shocking Rashi, because there's no avira happening. There's no negative commandment. There's no losase. He didn't actively violate anything. He failed to fulfill a mitzvah. Normally, failure to fulfill a mitzvah does not come with any punishment. The only exceptions are failure to bring the Karban Pesach and failure to do Bris Milah, and those are a totally separate story. Why is he being punished? And by the way, he doesn't owe them any money. It's tzedaka, it's chesed. It all belongs to him. But Rashi is flagging for us. Yeah, it turns out the question of chesed is radical. Elimelech, we open with somebody who is in the world of din. He's not going to give his hard-earned, justly belonging to him stuff. Megillah has no patience for it. If you are not going to sacrifice, if you are not going to give of your own stuff in a famine, no, it's hard, it's not easy, but it's expected, it's demanded. Lifnim mishuras hadin is not a recommendation. It's not an aspiration. It is an expectation. It's a requirement. And it is probably not a coincidence that we have this Elimelech to his kids trajectory. Elimelech, the first generation, abandons chesed, abandons the ethos of Avram Avinu. Then already his sons intermarry and they abandon all of Klal Yisrael completely. The sons are going to totally, give it all up. We'll totally become part of Moab. But that already comes because their father has had the erosion of the value of chesed. That's right. David Melech told us at the beginning of the shir, you want to be part of the nation, we need gomlei chasadim. And one can make the just argument, the money belongs to me, it's my stuff. We don't care. The chesed expectations of Megillah are radical. It begins with this Rashi. It begins with Elimelech. Next person where we see this very clearly is Floni Almoni, right? The anonymous redeemer who refuses to redeem Rus. Now, the Mefarshim all point out the irony of him being called Floni Almoni. He refuses to continue the name of Elimelech by marrying Rus from the family. And so the consequence is that instead of his name being mentioned in the book, he's referred to for all time as Floni Almoni. And then to get back at him, whenever we want to call somebody anonymous, we call them Ploni Almoni. Now, what did he do that was so bad? There's no villainy. That's the word. There's no villainy from Ploni Almoni. Now, there are no real bad guys. Oh, Megillah. Nobody is evil. There's no Izevel. There's no Achav. There's no Doeg or Achitofel. Nothing. There's no Avodah Zarah. There's no murder. There's no Gilead Raya. There's no Averos happening over here. Right? What does he do? Boaz tells him, look, at least most of the Mefarshim understand. Naomi is starving. She needs to sell her field. You're a close member of the family. you have an obligation to be the first one to purchase the field, to keep the field in the family. Yirmiyahu does something similar in Perek Lamed Beis, say for Yirmiyahu. If a family member has to sell the field, they want to keep the field in the family, so you buy it. Okay? And the Redeemer has no problem doing that. He has to lay out some cash, but it's not really a hit for him. Okay? He has to, he'll consult with his wealth management, but you know, where to get the liquidity to acquire the field. He'll keep it in the family, but it's his field. He's not really taking a hit, so he has no problem doing it. Okay? Then all of a sudden, when Boaz tells him in Pasuk Hey, well, hold on a second. B'yom kanoscha sadem yadna ami, when you buy the field, you also have to bring Rusin. She comes as part of the package. L'hakim shim hamesal nachal aso. And then all of a sudden, Ploni Almoni changes his tune. Lo uchalig ali pen eshchis es nachal asi. I can't do it. I can't do it because I may destroy my nachala. What's the nachala? I'm a far from a different understanding, but they all come to the same point, which is that Ploni Almoni is not going to do anything which is going to harm himself. Rashi says it's going to harm his lineage because we're going to bring somebody from Moab in, and there's the idea that that's prohibited. The Sepharno has like a xenophobic argument. He says, I'm going to bring an Isha Nachris, I'm going to bring a foreign wife. You know, how's that going to work in the house? Others, it says other interpretations, but it all comes from the same point, which is Ploni Almoni has no problem doing things if it's not going to harm him. But once he needs to do something where his own self-interest is not going to come out of it, he's out. And what's the legacy that Megillah has this person? His name gets dropped. His name gets dropped. He's not a bad guy. But if you're not going to set aside what's good for you, if you're not going to sacrifice, and that's the chesed, the lefnim mishuras hadin, once again, the Megillah has no use for you. Elimelech at the beginning of the book, Ploni Almoni at the end of the book. And just to drive it home, this one, the dot mikra flagged. I missed this one. But there are two other people who speak in the Megillah. One is Arpa, and we'll dispense there quickly in a minute. The one is the overseer of Boaz's field. He's also an unnamed person. Boaz says to his Na'ar, who's this woman? Who, and while Rus is gleaning. And the Na'ar says, oh, it's a Moabite woman. She came back with Nami and she wants to glean. Mefarshim argue whether this should be interpreted as like being positive towards Rus, being negative towards Rus, a whole lot to say about that. The bottom line, though, is that the Na'ar is unnamed. And the role of names is extremely important in the Megillah. We're very, very strategic who gets named and who doesn't get named. Tom Mikra argues, he's another example of a guy who just pursues din. And I think the idea here is that the Na'ar, he follows the halacha. The halacha is the poor can walk into the field and they can pick up some of the sheaves. So the Na'ar follows the halacha. He doesn't chase Rus away. He doesn't yell at her. He doesn't make her go onto the side. On the other hand, does he lift a finger to help her? Does he even ask about her name? No. And the Megillah immediately contrasts the behavior of the Na'ar, who follows the cut and dry halacha. Someone came in, they're here to pick up leket, we'll let them pick up leket, and that's it. Immediately, what does Boaz do? Boaz runs over to Rus, and he says, heard about you, stay here, stick with my Na'arot, you know, I'm gonna command all my workers, so I'll leave you alone. If you're thirsty, go get some water. If you're hungry, go get some food. Boaz immediately doesn't just settle with the bottom line halacha of what he's obligated to do. That's the behavior of the Na'ar. That's the din. He goes, lifnim mishuras hadin. Now this din is tzedakah, right? But even in the world of tzedakah, if you're obligated to give something, we're not calling that chesed. The Megillah is not calling discharging obligations chesed. No? Ploni Almoni, he was obligated to redeem the field. He'll do it. The Na'ar, we got to let them get the leket. He'll do it. But going beyond what's obligated is what we call chesed. The Na'ar won't do it. He's unnamed. Boaz does do it. He's named for all time. And the last person we have to follow this pattern, who again, well, it's totally fair, totally neutral, but the Megillah has no patience for neutral, is Rus's sister, is, of course, Arpa. Arpa, who initially goes along with Rus, but then Nami tells them, look, it doesn't benefit you to come with me. There's no hope. I can't give you husbands. I can't give you a future. I can't have children. I can't get men to be your husbands. You're going to come with me. It's a waste of your time. You're going to destroy your lives. Go back. Arpa goes back and Rus sticks, right? Rus sticks along. And the Mefarshim all comment on this. They all comment. The Malbim just has the sharpest line of it. That Arpa lo kivna rak el hamoil. Arpa, she'll do the right thing. She likes Naomi. She'll stick with Naomi. She's not going to betray Naomi, but only because she assumes that there's something in it for her as well at the end. I'll get a husband. You know, she comes from a rich, fancy family in Yehuda. I'll go back with her and she'll take care of me. It's easy to do the right thing when there's no sacrifice required. And the minute that she finds out that actually there is going to be sacrifice, the sacrifice is going to be terrible, she's out. She's out. Sfarno says the same thing, you know, and that's the difference between Rus and Arpa. That's probably why Chazal, one reason why, Chazal have no patience for Arpa. That's one of the spots, the Gemara and Sota, Mbez, where on the one hand, they give Arpa credit. They talk about some of the giants, which Arpa gives birth to. That's coming from a pasuk Derayam, Yilide Harappa, which sounds like Arpa. On the other hand, the contrast for all time, the idea that Goliath is the descendant of Arpa, who is going to be killed by David, the descendant of Rus. What begins with an understandable, sympathetic decision, the neutral decision. I'm not going to engage in Lifnim Mishuras Adin. If it's going to be the end of my line, if there's no future, no hope for me, no benefit, I'm not going to set that aside to tag along and take care of my aging mother-in-law when she goes back to her own country. Very understandable. Very reasonable. I don't know about you. The odds are I would have done the exact same thing. But again with Arpa, and again with Elimelech, right, the way Chazal are picking up with Arpa, again with Elimelech, again with that anonymous Na'ar, and again with Ploni Almoni, the theme that comes up again and again and again is either radical chesed or oblivion. Or oblivion, right? The beginning of Shoftim, Perek Aleph, when Yehuda and Shimon are fighting and they're helping each other, it seems innocuous. You would never imagine that Perek Aleph in Sefer Shoftim, right, when the two tribes are fighting together, could lead to Perek Chaf Aleph, where there's a massive civil war. But again, that is the idea. If we begin with din, if we begin with refusing to go lifnei mishuras hadin, the end is going to be disaster. The end is going to be Canaan. The end is going to be Sodom. The end is going to be destruction. The end is going to be people whose names are forgotten for all time. That, I think, is the radical, radical claim and demand when Medrash says that Rus is the book that's all about chesed. It's not just a nice and sweet story. It is something which is really demanding and demanding intensively. Okay? Mr. Shem, in the next couple of weeks, we'll talk about Boaz and Rus, and we'll see what exactly they're able to do, and we'll move from maybe the scary to the inspiring, and then we'll put it all together with Naomi at the end. So, Yishkach Rebbe for coming out. If anyone has any thoughts left to hear, otherwise, have a great night, and we'll see you, Mr. Shem, next week.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.